So, we're not in front. No, you have a seat.
Are you getting us?
Oh, yeah. So, who are you?
Who am I?
Yeah.
I'm Hal Howard, and I lead the Dynamics team here in Redmond.
Dynamics? What is that?
What is that?
I'm not in Fargo right now.
You're not in Fargo, huh? No. So, Dynamics is our business application suite. So, that's the products Microsoft's doing in for business solutions.
Ah, okay. Business. So you're the MBF, MBS?
MBS, yeah.
MBS, okay.
Yeah, one of the seven P&Ls at Microsoft, yeah.
Well,
One of those.
When I was over in Copenhagen, sorry.
Yeah.
I met part of your team, right?
Right.
And so tell me about your team. Tell me about what you guys do.
So we do development in three major locations right now, here in Redmond, in Fargo, which you mentioned a minute ago, and Copenhagen, which you already mentioned. So yeah. Fargo and Copenhagen were both sites that came in through acquisition. One from Great Plains was obviously headquartered in Fargo, and then Division Corp was headquartered in Copenhagen.
When we were walking up here, we were joking about how long it takes to Copenhagen. And it actually is easier to get to Copenhagen than to get to Fargo, somebody said?
Yeah, it's just about as easy to get to Copenhagen as it is to get to Fargo, because Copenhagen, there's a direct flight from Seattle, so 9 hours on the plane, you get internet access the whole way.
I know.
Perfect.
I wrote about this, the Boeing connection service. You get Wi-Fi for $30 each way, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, the trick is, do you have a battery on your laptop that lasts 10 hours? Is my last...
Well, if you're...
AC power.
Okay, you're charging Bill for the better seats, though.
Well, I've heard
that. Actually,
the
AC power actually works in economy flex or in business, either one.
Yeah, well, it was a $250 upgrade for me. And it was sold out, which really pissed me off. I wanted to pay the $250.
It's too bad for us because we don't get any relief. Hal is still sending us action items from while he's on the plane, so...
Yeah,
we're back in coach and he's in first class.
Yeah, but your battery only lasts 3 hours, so...
The flight attendants get really tired of that.
He's probably up in front going, why aren't my guys answering?
After 3 hours, you know.
So anyway, give me a 1 minute pitch about why a customer on the outside cares about what you guys do.
Well, most customers run businesses that are, you know, either have to do accounting or inventory management or professional services management or something, and they need an application that does that, right? So like our products are all about the applications that help you run your business, right? So Office is the personal productivity piece. We're the business application that actually executes all the sort of systems of record and inventory management, that sort of stuff is what we do.
Right. Now, I was reading some of the press reports on this team, and it seemed like, from the press reports, this team has been in reorg situation or anything like that. Is that true?
I mean, like the rest of Microsoft, we've gone from seven businesses to three major divisions, right? So we've got, Business Solutions and Office are now under Jeff Rakes and as a single sort of business, strangely called the Business Products Division, not Office.
Yeah.
So.
And you're managing teams in three different locations separated by 10-hour flights.
Right.
What's that like?
Well,
that's not like running Channel 9. Channel 9 has five guys and we're all in the same office, yeah.
Right. It's interesting. I'm in the Copenhagen office. Because of the 9-hour time delay, there's only, you know, an hour or two of our day that overlaps, and, you know, a lot of meetings get scheduled at 7 and 8 a.m. in Redmond, or if we do them later in the day, then they're 7 or 8 p.m. their time, sometimes later at night, so it puts a little stress on the people that have to attend those meetings. And then personally, I'm actually in Copenhagen 1 week in five.
Wow.
You know, working from there and you know, helping keep the teams together and coordinated and that sort of stuff. Fargo's a little easier because it's only a 2-hour time difference, and so, you know, there's a lot of the day that overlaps, and video conferencing, teleconferencing tends to be fairly effective in that scenario.
Yeah,
but the problem with doing any kind of video conference across things that are separated by 9 hours is that if I have to do a video conference at 10 in the evening, I'm likely to be in the office, so it's all webcam-based, right? So the high video conference stuff doesn't work.
Yep.
In that scenario, so you have to do webcams or something like that.
So. I'm sure there are live meeting compadres are working on that problem, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah, one hopes.
It's a new world when we can work around the world. I mean, if you don't work at Microsoft or a big company, you know, you don't have a sense of this. But every Microsoft office I go into is the same. My card key is the same, pretty much. And same drinks, almost. They have cooler candies in Copenhagen.
Absolutely.
Do you have any of those little licorice candies?
I'm sure we could round some up here.
They have these little, just to tantalize all the... They have, glass bins of little licorice candies that they don't have.
All these guys have been, so they know.
Well, the rest of Microsoft doesn't know this.
Exactly.
If you ever get a trip to Copenhagen, go check out their kitchen. They have cool little candies. Who are you guys?
I'm Jeff Wallace. I'm a director of program management for the teams here in Redmond.
Okay.
Yeah, my name is Ramana Parimi. I'm from the client and enterprise portal team, program management.
Okay.
I'm May Meenakshi Sundaram. I'm a program manager on enterprise portal team.
So how many different products does your team have?
How many different products?
Or, you know, because I don't use your product, so
okay.
I'm not running the business. I have no concept of what it is that your teams produce.
So the Dynamics product line, there are actually four ERP product lines. There's the AX product line that these guys all are working on. There's our SL, formerly Solomon, product line that's primarily oriented toward project accounting and construction type businesses. There's the former GP product, Great Plains.
And that's how we got... The reason we have offices in Copenhagen and Fargo is because we acquired companies.
Because we acquired two companies, yeah. So we acquired Great Plains, who had in turn acquired Solomon. So we got two product lines as a result of that acquisition. And we acquired Navision Corporation, who had also merged with a company called Damgard, and we got two product lines as a result of that acquisition.
Yeah.
Right. And so then we have the Nav product line and Xapta or AX, and those are the four product lines that we've acquired.
How do you know you need one of your products? You know, if you're a business on the outside, is it for small businesses? Is it for big businesses? And how do you
know? So NBS overall, in addition to those four ERP products, has a CRM product, right? It's a standalone sort of customer relationship management product. That's what CRM stands for,
yep.
Right? So sales, service, all those sorts of products. And then we also have a small business accounting package that we're selling here in the U.S., right? So total, if you're... You know, truly a small business, like single bookkeeper business, then small business accounting, the Office Small Business Edition product is probably the product for you. If you're a slightly larger business that now has, you know, multiple people involved in doing your accounting or your inventory management, warehouse management, those kinds of functions, then you're probably interested in one of our other product lines. And the further you go up line, the bigger your needs are, there are different products. So, in the project accounting niche or in the project-driven businesses, then the Solomon line is the primary product line here in North America. For global businesses, Xapta is the product line of choice. So if you're a global multinational, then the Xapta is the product of choice. Dynamics AX, right, as they've all been labeled now.
And what are the trends in these products? What's changing? What's different from 5 years ago to today? What are you guys working on, basically?
So what are we working on? Lots of new stuff, right? So everything from technology updates and making the products more user-friendly, easier to use, lowering cost of ownership and cost of maintenance for people in a big way. The enterprise portal, we just did a significant revamp to integrate that with SharePoint, so all of our web parts surface in SharePoint, and that scenario gets even better with Office 12 and the Office Server. Products, so we've got significant work going on there. Reporting side, all the integration with SQL reporting services and the work that's done there, so that people get end-user reporting. Like one of the hardest things to do with most business products is actually get the data you want out of the product. So like being able to bring the data out onto a reporting surface that people can actually use with something like Report Builder. Has been a big thing. On the business function side, there's a variety of different features, whether it's, GAAP compliance and SOX is a big issue here in the U.S., IAS compliance in Europe, better supply chain management solutions and collab solutions across your supply chain, so being able to exchange documents electronically with your supply chain is a big thing compared to 5 years ago. So XML document exchange is a big new area of development and evolution will get yet again different 5 years from now than it is today.
Advances in RFID.
RFID is a big new component. Primarily, we're into larger businesses, the suppliers of large business now, because that's a mandate here in the U.S. for like all of Walmart suppliers now have to supply RFID information. It's radio frequency IDs. That's what RFID stands for.
Yeah.
And so that's a big shift in the market. So there's constantly new business functionality people are looking for, and there's lots of stuff to work on. Right. These solutions are evolve rapidly. Everything from keeping up to with today's changes in tax reporting to, you know, new business trends.
Yeah. So. Now, when I was over at Copenhagen, and this was 6 months ago, so I'm sure it's evolved since then, they were writing tons of .NET code and building really nice designers to help business people keep their businesses running, right?
Right.
So tell me a little bit about what's the roadmap? What are we going to hear from your team over the next year?
So we're just now reaching code complete for the AX product line for a version called 4.0. That'll come out next June, and so there'll be lots of new product launch going on there. That release significantly enhances the portal and RFID and many of the things we were talking about there coming out in that release. That's a big release. There'll be a new version of the GP product line coming out end of next year. New version of the NAV product line coming out again end of next year. SL product line just released version 6.5, and we'll release a 7.0 toward the end of next year. So there's multiple product releases coming out and functionality that spans all the different spaces we were talking about.
Is there a website that you want customers to visit to find out about what you guys are working on?
So Microsoft.com/business solutions is where you can find out information about all of our products.
Okay. And tell me a little bit about the challenges of working together. You guys have a different kind of team than most of the teams I work here at are centralized and are in one building or, you know, maybe two buildings.
Yeah, well, the definition of cross-group work at Microsoft is to be two teams on different floors in the same building. Right? Yeah. That was cross-group work, right? So our challenge is a little different in that we have people spread out across multiple time zones. I just got back last week from India, where we are starting to do work in the IDC, where we have teams there. Small team that's spinning up to do things like data management and that sort of stuff. So now we not only have teams in Denmark and teams, two locations here in the U.S., but now India as well. We're doing vendor work in China for a variety of things. We have teams in our global delivery team in Amsterdam, in Moscow, in Spain, you know, a variety of markets. So it gets to be a challenge to keep things coordinated across that whole spectrum, but, you know, we use live meeting a lot, we're on conference calls a lot, we travel a lot, all right, compared to most groups, most R&D groups. I mean, these guys are probably logging more air miles than, 10 other people in R&D combined.
Yep.
And compared to most groups.
So remote dev centers make us a better organization. It forces us to tighten up our engineering excellence, you know, and our processes and just be better at execution, right? It takes cross-group collaboration to the next step. It's really cross-group execution in our world. Collaboration is nice. Execution is better. But the other thing that the remote centers are doing for us, especially a site in Copenhagen, is it's keeping us very honest in our approach to the market, because in our world, globalization and flexibility is absolutely key.
Yeah.
Two key trends that went in the marketplace. So having a group of developers there that are very much in tune with the requirements in the EMEA space and rest of the world is key to the way we build products and the functionality we deliver, and it's making us a better organization than we'd be if we were just in the U.S.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah.
I just spoke to executives at L'Oreal last week in Paris, and they seem to have the same kinds of problems that you guys are having with working with people around the world. I mean, they're the world's largest cosmetic maker.
Make no mistake, there's a tax to pay, yeah. Yeah. And we're paying that tax, but
there's also a huge benefit.
Huge benefits.
Yeah. And a huge benefit, he was talking about basically having people in market in these different locations who actually understand the local requirements and are driving us to, you know, to think globally, right? If you think about our problems, all the businesses we serve, L'Oreal being an example, right, is a business that has exactly the same issues, right? And so whether that's better integration to collaboration tools or better ways for their business tools to work, it's a good way to learn what your customers' needs are.
It's incredible to see, we are fortunate to have a can-do and will-do kind of team, the attitude, and, we don't take any shortcuts, starting the day off early and ending it late in the night and stuff. So that works out for the overall positive spin.
Yeah.
Thing. Yeah.
Are you learning things that are going to become a product in 2 or 3 years for global businesses to use?
Absolutely. As Hal pointed out, I think there's just a lot of work for us to do. And as we work together in various locations, we learn new things and bring them into pulling them into products is something that we're going to do release after release after release. Yeah.
Yeah. How has the technology world changed for you guys in the last 5 years? I mean, we have more broadband out there. We have more more customers using computers.
Yeah, I mean,
we have better computers, yeah, and the OSs are getting more reliable and better. But how are the technology foundations affecting what you're able to do for businesses?
Well, a typical, you know, sort of mid-market business 10 years ago, right, would have had a, you know, a single sort of mini computer type deployment in most cases within their environment, no integration to any other tools. I mean, many business applications 10 years ago were green screen, right, still, even though PCs were common in businesses and that kind of stuff. Now you see situations where businesses have PCs on every desktop. They're using Windows servers in their infrastructure. Our systems are very, you know, have very rich GUI UIs and better, you know, integration to those systems. Business intelligence inline is a huge difference compared to, say, an application 10 years ago. Right, and that, you know, to get the data out of a system is much, much easier than it was 10 years ago, to have that data right at people's fingertips. Globalization, big deal, you know, running one system that can span the globe. Didn't see that 10 years ago. Now it's possible to do that. So we have customers that are doing, you know, because of network connectivity, can do central deployments for organizations that span the globe. So there's a lot of things that technology has changed in the last 10 years and a lot of things that will change in the next 10 years.
Yeah. More and more the application is moving to the web, right, as we see more and more in the way of mobile workers and much more effective for a traveling consultant to submit time and expenses from either their place or their job site or on the plane back. There's still a heavy requirement for more transactional-oriented jobs, accountants, payroll clerks, that kind of thing. So we still address that in better and better ways. But
How do you guys, if somebody comes in here and says XYZ competitor does this and you guys do this, what's the competitive landscape for your team?
We do it better.
Well, of course you do.
And if we don't, we will.
but do you have a philosophy or something that sets your Microsoft's products apart from the other guys? Or?
Yeah, absolutely. Affordable adaptability is really what our mantra is, right? We want to deliver the robust feature set that an SAP or an Oracle does, but we want to do it in a much more effective total cost of ownership landscape. Those systems are very expensive to implement, very, very difficult to adapt to changing business environments. So we will deliver both. It's an and situation and not an or for us.
Yeah. When you say adaptability, it sounds like you're talking to developers, which is our core audience on Channel 9, right? What kinds of things can developers do with your system?
That's what makes MBS a very exciting place to be a developer, because frankly, this is where you have the opportunity to elegantly apply the great infrastructure and tool set that the rest of the organization builds to solving these real-world business problems. And adaptability, having the opportunity for, you know, normal somebody who's working within a business to be able to change a process, say exception handling within a purchase order process, be able to do that without having to call the IT guy to you know, restrike the business app is a huge advantage, and that's something that we're working on. It's a lot of hard work, so we need good people for that.
And integrated innovation, that is one of the key things for MBS. Every innovation that happens across other Microsoft products are going to be surfaced through MBS applications to the business users. So that is one.
Give me an example of that. All right, where, as a customer, if I sat down, where would I see this integration?
Is it a better Office integration or using Indigo or any web service infrastructure or any workflow foundation, like any key technology that Microsoft focuses, MBS would be the first and best customer.
Now, what is it? You guys are using Indigo or workflow
in the upcoming
what's
product,
the WCF?
Right?
Workflow. Windows Communication Framework. Bill Gates screwed this up too. I'm still getting used to. I like the single word names better than Go and Avalon. But
I noticed the camera was off when you said that.
No, but editing will take care of that. No problem, right?
We don't edit on channel.
So in the 4.0 release, like, we are working on the current web services platform. Yeah. But going forward, like, any key improvement in the thing will be surfaced.
Right. What is web services let you guys do that wasn't possible before, you know?
There's a number of integration scenarios that just get a lot easier. I mean, if you think about it, the only businesses that could afford to do integration with their suppliers before are ones that had heavyweight EDI systems, right? We're all proprietary binary format stuff, right? Well, many of the same services people want in a lighter weight way, and web services enable that to happen. So, like, the idea of being able to exchange documents with a supplier electronically or with a customer electronically to place orders on the web and all that sort of stuff, to integrate those systems in a very, you know, dynamic way, basically, you know, whether it's surfacing it through a website, right, via UI or electronically to another system, machine to machine, you know, web services is key to that. And so the whole integration framework that's built into our products allows that. You know, if you need to do transformations, then we integrate with BizTalk, and you can do, you know, guaranteed delivery and transformation services through BizTalk. And so, yeah, web service is a big part of what we do.
Where do you see customers making mistakes? Or where do you see, what's the agenda for the next year? If you were talking to a guy who's running a major company and thinking of upgrading his infrastructure or buying a new package, what would you tell him? What, you know?
So, I mean, essentially, business solutions in the past was a very fragmented market across the world. In fact, it still is, right? Business solutions is probably the most fragmented market in the world in terms of the number of vendors and that sort of stuff. That market is effectively, you know, the days when everybody could do their own vertical systems integrations to the GL, AR, AP, all the different modules of an ERP system are rapidly going away, right? And the reality is what people are looking for is more vertical solutions that fit their space. So if I'm an automotive supplier, then I want a solution that's tailored to automotive suppliers. If I'm a retailer, then I want, you know, systems that help me manage my downstream distribution networks and, you know, my supply chain and that sort of stuff. So getting more and more vertical is a big part of what businesses are looking for today. And so we have, you know, a twofold strategy there where we're building all the horizontal components, and then we have a great ISV ecosystem that's starting to build all the pieces on top. So your developer audience, particularly interested in that because there's a ton of opportunity to build those vertical solutions on top of our platform. We very much take the attitude that we are the horizontal components industry level provider, and there's going to be a great ISV out there that does the automotive niche. There's going to be a great ISV out there that does the, you know, the florist niche if, you know, if there's a market for that. And those sorts of things. So there's that's effectively a big differentiator for us because we've got competitors out there that think that they're going to do it all for everybody and they don't take an ISV approach to the world. So,
if you were a college kid right now, where would you be investing your what would you want college kids to learn about so that they're prepared for this new business world? Where do you see the needs for you know, IT guys at companies or?
Yeah, I mean, there's tons of opportunity for people that are studying, you know, either computer science or other business disciplines, you know, getting some cross education and sort of business problems is a big part of it. You know, there's being able to apply technology, right? It's the difference between mathematics and applied mathematics, right? It's great to learn the theory, but how do you get the application, right? And to actually learn some of the problem domains that people are faced with, you know, people that have both the skills to understand the business problem and the skill to develop the solution will be much more marketable in sort of the future of software in general. So I think that's a big opportunity for folks, is to study both business problems and computer science.
I really saw that when I got a personal tour around Heineken's Brewery in Cork, Ireland,
yeah,
where they make a Murphy's Stout, which is really good stuff. But you can tell, yeah. I have imbibed a little bit too. I got some free stuff there. But the whole factory floor was run by computers and had very little manual labor anymore. I mean, there was one guy who was basically doing quality control, making sure that the computers made the beer right, but
right,
you saw very few human beings there, except for in the IT department who were running all the systems and trying to upgrade those and make sure
they were all in rehab.
Oh yeah, yeah. They say you got to be careful about eating too much of the product there, or drinking too much of the product there. But,
that's where dog fooding can be a little dangerous.
Yeah.
Moving to the computers.
Yeah, and they seem to have a good time at work. So.
Yeah.
But you certainly saw that the business has been changed. I did the same thing. I got a tour of a pistachio factory and down here in California, and same thing. The guy has gone from nothing. In 15 years, he's gone to the number one pistachio processing plant in the world, all through IT. You know, and there's people out there who say IT doesn't matter. You know?
I once talked to a customer that you know had outsourced their IT department, right? But they actually own their own gas. They were a transportation company, and they own their own gas stations. I'm trying to figure out which was more critical to their business. Was it the, you know, as a transportation company, was it the gas stations that were more critical to their business, or the IT? And I think they were in the process of concluding that IT might have been more important to them than keeping the gas stations. So they were in the process of reversing that decision. And that's, it's one of those things where IT is a big part of any business, right? And having the right information to make the right decisions at the right time. And whether it's factory floor automation, like the examples you're talking about, or it's, you know, having the right information at the right time and stopping pushing paper, right? I mean, the big difference between the way a business system is designed today and the way it might have been designed 10 years ago, is 10 years ago they were designed to be the system of record after somebody had done the entire business process on paper. Right, so I'd done my three-part form for a sales order, and I sent it off to the accounting department to be entered into the system. Well, now the salesperson has a laptop or a tablet or something right with them, and they're interacting with the business system, business process support, whether it's availability to promise, for lead times, or it's, just the process of actually integrating the catalog online so that the business person has their product catalog right on their laptop. Is a big deal, right? Systems are designed way different today than they were 10 years ago.
Yeah. If Bill Gates walked in right now, what would you show him? What would you be proudest of if your work? You'd run, right?
I think his answer was Enterprise Portal, right? Fair point.
Enterprise Portal.
Yeah. I mean, the reality is Enterprise Portal is a big piece of what we're doing that people would be proud of. I mean, the new client, the RFID work, there's a ton of stuff we've shown Bill over the last 6 months and his plan for the next 6 months. And so Bill, showing him the client, whether it's the new user experience or the portal or any of those pieces, is something he'd be excited about and has gotten excited about in our reviews. So it's good stuff.
What is having a review with Bill like?
Having a review with Bill like? For some people, it's terrifying. For others, it's a good experience, right? Because Bill keeps you on your toes, right? He's always got some new angle of approach to things, right? Bill's going to tell you what's on his mind, and he doesn't edit anything. Like your videotapes don't get edited.
Nope.
Bill's mind doesn't get edited either. He's
nope.
going to tell you exactly what's on his mind at the time, which is a good thing, right? It gives you another point of view on the problem often, and so Bill reviews are a very worthwhile experience just in terms of. Nothing else, the prep work you do to put the thought in.
The key is to make sure the reviews happen during M0 and not near code complete.
That's the PM talking.
Yeah, PM talking.
That's right.
Yeah.
M0 is, explain to our viewers, milestones.
The planning part of the process,
yeah.
Correct.
You want to get Bill's input during planning, not during, the final stage of the product where he's going to say, but why didn't you do it this way?
Yeah.
Right, so getting Bill's input up front is a good thing.
Yeah. Anything else you'd like the viewers to know about what you guys do and what's coming from your team?
Well, I think there's a lot of stuff we're going to do over the next 6 months. And so what I'd say is, this is a good introduction to what we do for a living. And then stay tuned because we'll give you updates on specific stuff. Look for, product demos and other things later on Channel 9.
Cool.
So.
Yep.
Anything else?
Thank you.
What do you guys do?
That's pretty much it, yeah.
All right, cool. I'll see you on the Copenhagen flight coming over.
All right.
Yeah.
In coach.
Yeah. Well, these guys take all the seats up front. So.
Yeah, absolutely. You get the $250 upgrade. Right?
Yeah. Well, thank you.
All right.
Thank you. Specific annoyances, we love to hear those. Whether you think our vision is screwed up and you think that we're going in the wrong direction, we want to hear that also.
Right.
Shipping Windows is a big big train, freight train, with a lot of weight behind it, but it's not too late for us to affect things. It's never too late to let us know what you think, and we'll see what we can do.
One of the issues I saw come up was the people who believe in the web versus the people who believe in Windows, and there seems to be conflict there, right? What do you think of that? Do you think that this is a way for Microsoft to take over the web, or
I don't think it's
change the web? I don't know. How is Avalon going to?
We're not going to, Avalon is not going to replace the browser.
Yeah.
Avalon is all about reach. I mean, if you go enough in these circles, you hear the reach versus reach,
yeah.
Right? Where HTML is reach, meaning that there's tons of devices out there, tons of clients. It's sort of a platform neutral, mostly type of thing. Whereas reach is the people who invest for a specific scenario. I mean, when you write a game for the Xbox, that's rich, right? You're targeting yourself at one platform, whereas if you write, Amazon.com, by and large, that's reach. Now, people like Google, they'll have their Google bar for searching. They're starting to actually sort of blur the lines there and make things, utilize some of the platform capabilities to expose their services in a better way. What Avalon really is when we say the best of the web and the best of Windows, is what we're trying to do is take some of the things that people love about the web, and apply that to their rich story also. So if you are going to be building a rich solution, we want to make it easier for you to build that rich solution and take a lot of the good ideas that have come out of the reach solution and apply those to building Windows. For example, nobody's ever afraid to go to a web page and access it, or mostly they're not afraid,
yeah.
that it's going to install something on their machine, that it's going to eat resources, that they know that if they close that browser, that thing's gone, and if they've never visited again, they never visit it again.
We've all had spyware. There's
spyware, and there's problems with that. But the sort of zero touch, go to a site, there it is type of thing, that sort of zero deploy thing, is something that everybody loves about the web.
Yeah.
Windows isn't the same way. You get a Windows app, you have to run an installer, it installs something on your machine, you're not sure what it's doing. You have to, say yes to some scary dialogues. So we're trying to work to make it so that you can get the capabilities of Windows without having to having the sort of deployment story of the web. So that's one example where we're trying to blur these. The ease for which you can go out and actually grab stuff off the web and sort of interact with other servers and HTTP, that's one of those things that you can do in the browser really easily.
Right.
Doing that in Windows is a lot harder. Part of Indigo, which is not part of Avalon, but part of the Longhorn story, and one of the pillars of Longhorn, is to make it easier for you to go out and interact with servers on the web. And then Avalon is the way that you take that information that you get and present it to the user.
Right.
So we're trying to build an integrated platform that's rich, that answers, that brings a lot of the reach benefits home.
Okay. For the average developer, right, for a VB guy or a C# guy, is this going to just be mind blowing when they get into Avalon? And how do they prepare? What should they pay attention to for the next year? Not somebody like working on Adobe Photoshop, but an average business developer who's building,
Well, the first step is to start getting some experiences with managed code. So if you're working with C#, you're already dealing with managed code. If you moved up to VB.net, then you're dealing with managed code. And writing managed code is not the wrong thing to do. I mean, Avalon will be supplanting WinForms, but WinForms is more reach than it is rich, right? So it's the reach versus rich thing in some ways as a spectrum, right? You write a ASP.NET thing and deploy it via the browser, that's really reach. You write a WinForms app, you can go down to Win98, I believe. I don't know what they support down to. Avalon's going to be Longhorn only. So writing WinForms is not the wrong thing to do now, and it's going to be it's going to be using .NET, and and you're going to get some experiences there. If you want to prepare yourself for the new presentation capabilities that we're going to be exposing in Longhorn, then you want to use some good design principles to separate a lot of your business logic and a lot of the more sort of less UI intensive parts of your program out into separate modules, so that perhaps you can adjust later on and have a new presentation layer on top of your business logic, and that'll probably be easier for you to move into Avalon when that comes along.
Okay. I've had this question from like Reuters, right? They're looking at building an app that'll come out in 18, 24 months. How should they architect their system so that the next round, because that's probably just right before Longhorn's going to ship.
Yeah.
Right? So it's probably.
And that app will still run on Longhorn, just so you know. I mean, this at the PDC, I think it was Hillel got up there and ran an old, Lotus 1-2-3 in a DOS box. I mean, our commitment to making your app still run is only tempered by security. So,
right.
So old apps will still run. So go ahead, but.
Right. So how should they? What are some architectural things, or what are some things that they could do in their planning for the next? Because you know, if they're doing it ship cycles every 18 months, they're two versions away probably from doing a Longhorn version, right? So in the next version, what should they be doing to sort of prepare their code base for a Longhorn version, you know, 36 months from now?
So what I would say the best thing to do is to separate out your program into the parts that are UI intensive and the parts that are more data intensive or business logic intensive. And when you do that, then you can start moving those UI intensive parts over to Avalon if that's the direction that you want to go. And if you find the features that Avalon's offering compelling, which you know we hope that you are. Another thing that you can do is that if you have sections of your program sort of like leaf nodes in your layout that are interesting to you. So, for example, you have a little help pane on the side, or you have a wizard that you bring up. Those are things that you can move over to Avalon when the time comes piecemeal.
Okay.
So, if you want to start using Avalon, that doesn't mean that you have to rewrite your entire application. You can pick and choose pieces of your application to move over to Avalon. So that means that you could start out and say, I'm just going to write my splash screen in Avalon,
right,
and the rest of my app is going to be the same old, same old. And then you can move forward and say, I'm going to make my toolbar be, you know, I'm going to write a special toolbar in Avalon, and everything else will be the same. Or I have this pane over here which gives you context-sensitive tips as you navigate around a program. So, you know, sort of pick and choose the pieces that you think it would be most exciting to get the benefits of Avalon and Longhorn in, and start thinking about what you want from those, and then when the time comes, you can sort of start transitioning stuff over on a piece by piece basis.
Right. If you were a VC in Silicon Valley, how would this change your investing? What are the business opportunities for, you know, what kind of apps do you expect to come out of?
Well,
rebuilding Windows in this way.
You know, I think the prevailing wisdom has been that the fat client is dead, and that everything's moving to the web. And I think Avalon and Longhorn in general is Microsoft's stake on the ground, saying that we believe that power on your desktop, locally sitting there doing cool stuff, is here to stay. So whereas, you know, at the height of the dot-com bubble, if you said I wanted to write a new desktop application, everybody would be calling you crazy because you weren't doing dogfood.com.
Right.
This is Microsoft saying that's not crazy, that we're investing on the desktop, and we think that it's a good place to be, and we're hoping that we're going to start a wave of excitement leveraging all these new technologies that we're building. That's not to say that Microsoft Dogs 97 or whatever it was, the old CD multimedia things that we're writing, is going to be the way of the future. We think that connected internet-aware applications are where it's at, but rich clients that are connected to the internet and that are data-aware, I think, is going to be very exciting. And you know, anybody who's been dealing with the blogosphere and you know, RSS and the whole slew of rich clients around that, I mean, that's a perfect example of somebody writing a rich client that leverages data sources on the network to do interesting things. And we think that there's going to be more and more of that. And I think RSS and blogs are a great first example of a great marriage between standard data and rich Windows-only UI.
Right. What platforms is Avalon going to ship on? Is it going to be just a desktop, you know, a high-end Dell machine? Or is it going to ship on tablet PCs or pocket PCs?
We're working hard to support a range of desktop class hardware. The user experience that you're going to see is going to be tiered based on your hardware and power requirements. For instance, you may have a laptop that has, and I don't want to make any promises here, this is some of the trade-offs that we're trying to, feel out and figure out what the right thing to do is. But if you may have a laptop that has a Radeon 9600 with 64 megs of VRAM in it, which is
a
pretty high-end laptop at this point. And it may be very well capable of running some of the more advanced Longhorn visuals, specifically the glass for the DCE. However, you may not want to run that. Oh, I'm sorry, the DCE, that's desktop compositing engine. That's the... We've called it many things: DCE, DWM, desktop compositor.
Okay.
We have a habit of renaming everything with acronyms at least three or four times. So
right.
We try and get our ducks in a row before we start talking to people outside the company.
Right.
But you'll see some occurrences where you'll see stuff like that pop up. So we have you may be able to run that on that laptop, but the those graphics processors that are in the laptops can take a lot of power. So you may not want to run all those great visuals all the time if you're running on battery. We're working hard to find the right balance and the right scalability of features so that we can run on everything from a tablet PC, which those tend to be smaller and lighter and relatively underpowered compared to the monstrosity that I have sitting next to my desk here, that, workstation from Dell, right? So there's a whole slew of capabilities, and we want Longhorn to scale on that.
Nice.
That being said, Avalon and Longhorn aren't going to run on your pocket PC. At some point, the technologies that we're making will make it onto the server. I don't have specific knowledge of when that'll happen.
Yeah.
But we're really concentrating on sort of the laptop to desktop set of devices right now.
Let the other things shake out later.
Yeah. Well, you can only do so much at once. So,
yeah. And you got to bet on the high end hardware too. So,
by the time we ship, it probably won't be that high end. I mean, there was a time where I remember I got a in college I got a 1.2 gigabyte hard drive, and I was really excited because that thing was huge, and I had no idea how I would ever use that much space, and just the term gigabyte and gigahertz processor sounded so out there, right? But a gigabyte of memory in a machine is not unheard of now. It's not that uncommon. And moving forward, even more memory, faster processors, 64-bit, the whole slew.
Is Avalon set up for 64-bit processor?
Yeah, we're working hard to work on 64-bit. I don't know specifically whether a 64-bit of Longhorn will ship at the same point as a 32-bit. I haven't heard any plans on that one way or the other.
Okay.
But 64-bit is not going away, and that's something that we're taking very seriously.
Yeah.
Managed code is one of those things that lets us be pretty much agnostic in a lot of cases, but... we make sure that we build the 64-bit flavors of Windows every time we build a version of Avalon.
Yeah,
so
I'd expect a 64-bit, because it's getting more and more.
Oh yeah, more and more mainstream, more and more. It's coming.
By the end of 2005, I would expect.
Yeah, yeah.
A ton of chips on.
Yeah, I don't know specifically what the release plans are there, but we're taking 64-bit super seriously.
Yeah. What else about Avalon? How did it get its name?
Oh, we voted on it, which I wasn't a huge... I didn't vote for the Avalon name.
Okay.
We could be worse, but I'm thinking, we could have a meaner, cooler name, too. So
yeah.
That's what you get when you vote on a code name.
Yeah. Naming by committee doesn't work
yeah.
all that well. Since you guys have been you know, one of the major .NET customers, right? What are some of the best practices you've learned?
.NET on the client. Yeah, it's been .NET on the client is different than .NET on the server, and so we've been working hard with the CLR team, the Common Language Runtime team, to actually make it so that you can run, you know, manage code in client processes, in a lot of client processes, efficiently. And so there, tips and pointers for writing good managed code. Man, well, choose your interop lines carefully. We've made mistakes there, and we've had to go back and rethink and re-architect there. So it pays to do a little bit of perhaps prototyping when you're dealing with drawing some interop lines. Other specific pointers. You know, don't optimize without measuring. I think that a lot of people assume something's slow, and it turns out that something else completely is slow. So, you know, be very evidence-based when you go through and start optimizing a program or optimizing your code. I think that that's probably the anybody who's done perf work, that's their number one axiom is measure, and, you know, don't think that you know what's going on.
Interesting.
Other managed code pointers.
Do you guys use tools to measure that are out in the community, or are they tools to us?
I believe some of the tools that we've been using are public. Other tools, we have our own internal tools that we've built for dealing with this type of stuff. I'm trying to think. The .NET memory profiler is public, I think. Yeah, which gives you a good idea of who's holding on to what memory. And there's profilers out there that are managed code savvy. So, yeah, there's a lot of tools out there for doing this, but even, you know, building your own tests and, you know, saying, you know, get time now, get time then, compare the two and see what, you know, what's faster. I mean, just building that in as you architect and being able to measure that as you go is really, really helpful. That's good practice whether you're writing managed code or not.
Yeah. Do you code? I mean,
Yes. I'm in sort of a sort of jack of all trades position. So, for the PDC, the demo that we showed in front of everybody else was using some code that wasn't available in the release that we gave to everybody else. It was real code that we were running. It wasn't slideware by any stretch of the imagination. But it wasn't code that was in the main builds.
Right.
And I put in a lot of time helping getting that stuff up to snuff, and then that code is transitioned into the product now. And but specifically around the 3D support, when we went out with the PDC, we didn't have any Avalon specific 3D APIs, and the next build that we're going to be releasing publicly will have those APIs. And so, just a quick word about that: our 3D support is meant to be sort of 3D for the average developer, not for the games developer or something like that. You know, DX definitely still has its place. It's a lot more to the metal than we are. You have to deal with a lot more problems with DX than you have to deal with when you deal with
our
stuff.
What are some things where you'd expect to see 3D?
So we're hoping that people will use 3D in appropriate places in there. Again, it's like the you know, too many true type fonts on the same document type of thing. And we're thinking that it can be overdone. But, you know, if you have an icon that, you know, some 3D icon, maybe you can, as you're showing a transition when something going in, something else coming up.
So an icon can be a 3D object?
Yeah, so you could have, and by icon I mean like maybe a little visual in your application. And we're looking to see where else we can extend this into the system. So no promises there. But with the 3D, you'll be able to take a 3D model, put it in your application, maybe rotate it behind, you know, something as some sort of cool sort of background type of visual. That type of thing, just to sort of give your application some more polish. You should be able to use the 3D to do some data visualization type of things, like some bar graphs, that type of thing. You can use it, you know, like I said, for transitions, things sliding in and out.
Are there any UI elements that are elements that are going to be 3D that I could make a UI that's 3D?
So all of our layout and all of our UI is still done in 2D. However, the display of a particular control might be done in 3D. And this stuff's probably coming on a little bit later than the next build that we're showing. So the 3D stuff is just, you know, still a work in progress. But for example, if you had a charting control,
okay,
and you know, and you data bound that to some data source somewhere, it could display its contents using the 3D stuff. Yeah, with 3D bars and stuff like that.
Okay.
That's
so you could fly through the bars or something.
Yeah. And so, I mean, the idea is that you know, right now you have a rectangle shape for drawing a rectangle. The idea is that you'll have a 3D scene shape for drawing a 3D scene.
Okay.
It's sort of like an image, sort of like a rectangle somewhere between the two.
Okay. Do you manage programmers then?
I did. I don't anymore. I think. Refer to myself as dev lead at large.
Right.
Not quite up to the architecting title, but you know, sort of hopefully heading that way at some point. So,
right. I'm just wondering what life is like. You know, what kind of tools you use? What do you type code and visual?
So, I'm a spec monkey. So my job day to day is what I do is I look for places where I think we haven't defined something in our application in our platform, or where I think we need better definition on something, or a new feature, or listen to customers and they say, you know, this part of your platform is really screwed up. You really need to fix that. Here's some ideas, and we, you know, so I talk with some of our customers internally and externally. You can go to my blog, 80%spelledout.net. So,
yeah.
And people send me feedback, or I find things, you know, I talk to people and find problems, and then I take issues on an issue-by-issue basis,
right,
and try and drive solutions across the team. So
okay,
there's a real need for people who try and look at drive problems from sort of somebody has a problem to here's the plan and here's what we're going to do. So it's whenever you have a large enough team, people tend to organize themselves in silos, and it's too easy not to talk to people in the other silos.
Yeah.
So people like me, my job is to help cut across those silos and maintain consistency across the platform.
Okay. Awesome. Anything else you want to tell us?
Working
here at Microsoft, or?
You know, if you look at the platform and you have great suggestions or comments on the graphic stuff, go ahead and, check out my blog, post some comments. You know, get a hold of me and let me know. I mean, we're really interested in taking feedback. You know, this is the platform that we're building for the next 10 or 15 years. I mean, that's what we're trying to do here, and we want to make sure that we get it right. And there are opportunities when you're shipping a V1 that you don't have when you're shipping a V2.
Right.
So we're really interested in getting all the feedback we can as early as we can.
Can that feedback actually do any good?
I mean, Oh, yeah.
Have you seen any evidence of things that were suggested at the PDC that you guys actually reacted to? Or?
Oh, gosh, I'm trying to think.
Or that you saw on a blog that somebody said, oh, my God, we didn't think about that.
Yeah, I think, you know, for example, so one of the, a lot of our objects that in our object model are this changeable class. And there's been a lot of confusion over the need for that changeable class and what exists and why we have it there. So we've done some soul searching to make sure that's still what we want to do. And even based on that, we realize that this is something that we're going to have to really do a lot of user education around.
Right.
Another thing that I saw at the PDC is I was manning the hands-on labs where people were doing the screensavers.
Yeah.
And the screensaver was built using our animation system. And it was hard, I think, for people to get a hold of what was going on there. There were a lot of, it was sort of an ad hoc usability lab watching people do that. And we're working on some significant changes to that system to help improve it and make it more usable and make it more approachable in a lot of ways.
Okay.
So I think that's probably a concrete example of where we've actually gone through and taken some of that experiences and fed it back into our process.
Right.
you know, we do our own usability testing where we'll come up with some problems and give them to developers, and those poor developers are videotaped. They know that it's happening. It's not a voyeur type of thing. Yeah. They know that they're being videotaped as they try and go through these exercises and where they get stuck. And watching those is really enlightening. And unfortunately, we never have enough time or resources to do enough of those. So. Yeah. Making everybody at large be, you know, everybody out there sort of be our usability testers is helpful.
Yeah.
And, you know, out of the whole deal, you get an easier platform to use when we're all said and done. So.
That's true. I think that's about it. I have to think of anything else. What's the, for both end user and developer, what's the performance going to be like? What is your feeling? It's hard to tell at this point, I'm pretty sure. But, you know, is it going to be a better experience on Longhorn with Avalon versus WinForms? Is it going to be slower? Is it going to be faster in some area?
There's probably going to be cases where we're slower, and there's definitely going to be cases where we're faster. It's a trade-off, just like everything else. In fact, with .NET in general, there's some trade-offs between performance and ease of writing, and there's cases where writing something in .NET may eventually even be faster than writing it in native C code, similar to how, you know, it's writing in native C code can be faster than writing in assembly in some cases also. So
it is harder to write crappy code in that.
It's easy to write crappy code, no matter what you're programming in. I mean, it's never underestimate a developer's ability to shoot himself in the foot, right? So, and we've all done that stuff too. So, there are some bugs that it's harder to make in managed code, but then there's other pitfalls that you have to be aware of. I think, you know, as a company, Microsoft thinks that those trade-offs are worthwhile, and we think that overall it's a better experience for the developer and then hence for the end user with respect to reliability in the end product that they get. Avalon's a similar type of thing, where there are some places where, you know, if you construct the right scenario, Avalon will look very poor compared to the old stuff, but we think overall the trade-off and what you're giving up and what you're buying for it is a huge leap forward. So that's why we're doing this. As far as performance specifically goes, again, there's going to be things that are a lot faster and things that are a lot slower.
Right.
And it's just going to be different is the scenario. So as an example, right now, in like I was talking about with WM Paint and user, as you're moving a window around, that window user is constantly asking the apps that you're obscuring and revealing to update themselves. In the window manager prototypes that we have right now, moving a window around is a lot smoother now on Longhorn with the desktop compositor than it is without the desktop compositor.
Okay.
But we use more memory, so because we're keeping extra data around to be able to do this stuff. So if you were on a machine that was memory constrained, then it might be the inverse. So,
okay.
Yeah, these computers are tricky things. They're not easy to predict sometimes.
Right. What kind of box would you buy? Let's say you got the PDC, but what kind of box would you recommend?
Memory is probably the biggest thing. A decent graphics card, like, you know, a Radeon 9700 level card, or one of the newer GeForce cards will work well. You don't have to spend an arm and a leg on the latest and greatest right now. Of course, you know, the more graphics hardware you get, the better will look. But to enable some of the features, you don't need to go all the way and buy the $500 graphics card. Memory is probably the biggest thing at this point, and that's one of the things that we're working hard on doing. And that's, again, one of the challenges with working with the CLR on the client side. On the server side, you have one or two applications that are loading up the overhead of the CLR. On the client side, you may have many more processes that are loading that up. So that's something that we're working with the CLR team and giving them the feedback they need to improve that story. So ongoing work there.
Cool.
All right.
Thanks a lot, man.
Thanks, Robert.
Thanks.
Good talking to you.
Yeah, that was fun. Good stuff.